Oh, hello. And welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters. And today I'm joined by Carl and special guest Andy No.
Thank you for having me.
And today we're going to be talking about Anna Kasparian declaring war on the left, the Antifa gang trial, and why is it flooding in Dubai? So that'll be the subject matter. I have an announcement to make.
Go ahead.
We have Lads Hour tomorrow. So this is announcing if you want to join Lads Hour. This is, for those who don't know, Shit Talking Live, which this one will be on Understanding the UK, where we just sit around and it's very laddish. That's the idea. So that'll be that.
It's just some fun.
Yeah, it's tomorrow at 3 p.m. UK time. So that's the announcements done. There is one more thing I have to say, apparently. There is a thing here that says we're looking for a production manager with video and audio editing skills to be available to work in the Dulwich area of London. And if you're interested in the job, apply at lotuseaters.com/careers. So there you are. There's that. Go and take a look at it. If it's for you, apply. If not, don't. Right. That's that, I suppose. I suppose that's all the announcement stuff done. Should we do a bit of an introduction for yourself?
Sure.
For anyone who's new.
Well, my name's Andy Ngoh. I am an American journalist, most known for my reporting on Antifa. I've had to leave the U.S. because my reporting made me a target of their violence, particularly in Portland, Oregon, where I'm from and where I was living, reporting during 2020 when there were months and months of nightly riots that turned deadly. And now I report on things including exposing sex criminals and those who are accused of child sex crimes. I focus on the criminality of trans suspects and other people that other categories of suspects that have been placed on a certain pedestal by our societies.
I imagine there's not a small amount of crossover there as well, gotta be honest.
Actually, well, I know you're being sarcastic because
a lot
of people notice that there is a lot of crossover, surprisingly or not, between those who are involved in far left extremism and sex criminality.
Yeah.
And pedophilia.
It's Carl Rittenhouse found out. Trying to a crowd of Antifa, you end up hitting a pedo.
Anyway, we will get into that later, but we shall begin with the first topic, I suppose.
So, you guys know who Anna Kasparian is, right? You've been aware of her for some time.
Adult human female?
She is indeed an adult human female, that's correct. And she works for the Young Turks, which has long been known as a very far-left media outlet, in the same way that we're not a far-left media outlet. And she's come a long way in the past few years. Because, and what I love about this is that reality really caught up with Anna because she lives in California. California is not doing so great. And so you can go back to 2017, just after the victory of Trump, where she was quite a different person, actually. Let's just watch this.
Look, I've come to the realization that the people who get that rise out of, you know, attacking others, you know, putting other people down, those are miserable people. Right? They're not happy people. And so this is how they get joy in their life. And I feel like if you see memes like that, or if you see people getting attacked, or if you will sit back and have no emotion when you see unarmed individuals getting shot and killed, well then, I mean, look, you're a sociopath, right? And so I feel bad for you more than anything, right? And so if you want to attack me for being overly emotional or for passionately, you know, defending those who are defenseless, then go ahead. You can attack me all you want. But am I saying that I'm better than you? I guess I'm going a little further than you are. Yeah, I'm fucking better than you. Okay. Much better than you. You are garbage. Okay. If you get
a classic of a person who was clearly not very happy in the position that she was in. And I'm really sympathetic to Anna because she's going on the same sort of journey that I've been on. Where you begin, you think you're left wing or something, and you think, yeah, I mean, you know, I just want good things for people. And then you realize that actually this takes on a life of its own. And so Anna Kasparian was kind of forced to take the red pill, as we describe it on this era of the internet. And she ended up becoming a TERF.
Well, that clip we just saw, I think, is embodiment of narcissistic compassion. And I think on the one hand, I can understand the perspective of part of what she was saying, that you see what appears to be injustices in the society around you, and you want to use your platform to speak out on that. And then you see then the narcissism creep in. It's where, but she's quite plain in her statement there that I am better than you. And then in my reporting over the far left violent extremists, what I've seen is that same rationale taken to its logical conclusion is because I'm better than you, I am justified in use of violence against you because of your views or your political activism, including to the point where I can maim and or kill you. So that view that she expressed there at this point in the past actually leads somewhere very, very, very dangerous.
Yeah, and it's very obvious that this is a characteristic of the left. Everyone has seen this. I don't know, there must be a proper psychological term for it. But like you say, it's just a really virulent strain of narcissism that is underpinning the moral high ground that they think that they occupy. But as things carried on, and as we covered previously, the people that the left would usually characterize as being completely powerless actually do have some power, especially if they're right in front of you and they're sexually assaulting you in your front garden or something like that, which I believe is what happened to her. And then that sets her on the path of saying, well, hang on a second. Is a woman actually someone with ovaries? And there is some sort of biological component to it. And she's arrived at a point now where, well, she's just fully against almost everything that the left is saying. I mean, in this particular, we won't watch this one, but she is commenting on this piece by a former NPR editor, I think he's former, about how NPR is too liberal and anti-Trump. And she's like, yeah, actually, I think maybe people on the left have kind of lost their minds over Trump. And actually, maybe we could talk about things. And of course, Andy, when was the last time you went to the US? What are petrol prices like over there at the moment?
Last year, they're high. And I think when I'm in the US now, I don't, I'm there for work. So on trips. So I'm not driving as I used to. So I don't necessarily feel that same type of impact, but the cost of living impact that I see is just in buying groceries.
Yeah.
Or going out to eat.
Yeah.
It's quite shocking because I go in like 6 month intervals.
Yeah.
So you in the really last 4 years, I can see, wow, yeah. It's shocking.
I mean, some of my favorite things are just watching TV shows from like just 5 years ago. And when they're, you know, they pan past a gas station and you can see $2 or something for petrol. And then you see a photo of California now and it's like $7 for petrol. And it's like, wow, okay, that's been a really eventful term for Joe Biden. And so she's really feeling the pinch. And like many other sort of liberals in that sphere, they're like, okay, well, look, Trump is, of course, mega Hitler, and I hate everything about him, but I am paying an awful lot for things that are happening. And so she actually wants to hear right-wing opinions. I mean, like this one where she just says, in fact, we'll listen to it.
That might force you to reconsider the way you're reporting a story. Maybe there's a fact that you're unaware of, and you might be unaware of it because we all live in filter bubbles depending on what our political ideology is. And so, again, it's one thing to support the idea of diversity based on skin color, and I do think that it is important to have diversity in the workplace, but it's not just about skin color, it's also about viewpoints. It's also about lived experiences. It's also about ideology. You want diversity of ideology represented as well. I do think it's important
just
to
remarkable,
have
just how far she's come since 2017, where she's on her moral podium screaming down, I'm better than you, Callum. And now she's like, actually, Callum, I'd like to hear your opinion. It's a big change. I'm very proud of her. What?
Yeah, but it had to happen to her before she cared.
Yes. But I think conversely, there's most people only care about things when they happen to them.
Okay, but that doesn't deserve a round of applause from me. I'm not
fair enough.
I think she deserves praise. She's incredibly brave for she up until recently she's staked her public persona and her career as a commentator of a woman of the mainstream left or liberal left. And now she's taken on dissident views that may land her in hot water career-wise or among the audience that she's worked hard to curate. That's brave. I'm sure you and I can think of a lot of people who, because of their positions as public people and where they are in their work, that they don't say publicly what they actually think, even as their views evolve. They keep their head down. Go along, get along.
Who is the chap from CNN who was caught saying that the Trump trials were a nothing burger a few years ago?
Don Lemon.
No, it wasn't Don Lemon. It was a different chap. But it was someone like Don Lemon. Well, you can tell that that's an exact point, case of what you're talking about.
Yeah, that was, it was a contributor. I forget his name. But yeah, and that was just, it was like a street moment. Somebody happened to have a camera. So,
Van Jones.
Van Jones. Yeah. You know, I've had now many, many years working in the public space. I've crossed paths with lots of media people, and in my view, a lot of them are actually really cowardly. If they are placed in a position where their work might be at risk because of views they have that are unpopular, that they'll shut up and remain quiet, even if their whole brand is about truth telling and all that.
And I actually really agree with you on this, because this can't be comfortable for Anna, because it's evident that the Young Turks is a very ideologically left-wing place. And so everything and everyone around her is going to be infused with this kind of ideology. And she lives in California, which itself is a very left-wing place. And so she could actually find herself becoming quite unpopular with the people around her by saying, well, look, actually, maybe we shouldn't be stigmatizing all conservatives. Not all conservatives are QAnon. And what's great about this is, in this particular clip, she literally, in fact, again, she's critiquing Mehdi Hasan, which is someone, you know, that I've critiqued many times. But she makes just a superb point here.
Start with Mehdi Hasan, who says, this essay has it backwards. You can't blame NPR for conservatives not listening. You have to ask why conservatives have gone down conspiracy holes, climate change, 2020 election, vaccines, and how on earth mainstream media is supposed to cater to them now. But I think in that statement, Mehdi Hasan makes a mistake that I myself was making for a long time, where I was just lumping in all conservatives as one thing. They're all QAnon believers. They're all this, they're all that. But there are gradations. There are factions within the Republican Party and among conservatives. Right now, there's actually a growing divide among traditional conservatives who tend to side with the neocon faction of the Republican Party. And then you have the MAGA crowd, the America First crowd, that's much more isolationist.
So good for her, but notice the post Left Watch Twitter account. Every conservative believes at least a few of those hateful slash crazy beliefs. So Anna's problem is that she is accurately characterizing the right, and large segments of the left are turning on her for this. And so that's just her saying, hey guys, maybe the conservatives aren't all Nazis, and actually maybe we should listen to them. So when she gets into things that are a bit more ethnic, should we say? Like this one. 8 people were killed and 41 injured in shootings over the weekend in Chicago. It's not even a blip on anyone's radar. She's making a point that a lot of them don't want to hear. And actually, this puts her in a particular zone that is well outside of the comfort zone of the average left winger. And so, yeah, I think this is fairly brave for her to actually start coming out and saying, because she can get in trouble for this, especially when she goes on like a mad rant about DEI. Which, of course, is one of those sort of sacred cows of the left. Of course, we need to have diversity, equity, and inclusion. And again, we'll just listen to her.
Riddled with culture war nonsense, okay?
I think that a lot of people, including myself, to be honest, are starting to get the sense that, wait, is DEI actually to help minorities across the country? Because I'm in favor of that. Or is it to help elite African-Americans and minorities get the jobs they want, right?
Like many other progressive school districts, Amherst uses restorative justice practices, which prioritize mediation and reconciliation over punishment, meaning nothing, meaning no action. Okay, don't feed me this BS about like, oh, we did mediation. No, okay, you could take your mediation and shove it up your ass. Stop wasting taxpayer money and playing with these kids' lives by engaging in your cutesy little culture war games. Go do that in your own time. Go do it in your own home. I don't care. Mm-hmm. So just be a freaking human being. Treat the freaking students with respect. And can we please just hire the most qualified people to do the job? Because kids can't even freaking read. And we're having a
literally me in 2015.
Yeah, but that's the thing that stings me. Sitting there being like, damn, the kids can't read. Well, a few years ago, people were saying kids won't be able to read in a few years if you go down this path. And they did anyway. And it's just like, you know, if you decided to shit yourself and then complain there's feces in your pants. I find it kind of annoying from these people because I've watched their content for a while. We've all listened to them rabbit on about how these things would be great, and then they're living with the consequences of it.
But think of her, though. She's had to break herself out of the left-wing filter bubble, in which it's not just that she consumes the media. She's surrounded by all of those people. It's her job to reinforce the left-wing filter bubble. And so for her, it is much more difficult to come out of that. I'm actually a lot more sympathetic on this. You've just got such a cold face, Callum.
I'm a cold person in regards to this stuff.
Well, Callum, you see, like in places like Portland, where the political agenda of the radical left has been mostly realized, defunding police, hatred of police, pro-open drug abuse, pro-homeless encampments in public areas, that has been tolerated and it's impacted the lives of the liberals and left-wing people who don't like it. But for a lot of them, they will never voice out against the actual policies. They'll somehow work within their mind. It didn't work out because it's not being implemented in this way or that way. It can be better manifested through a doubling down. And so I think to see someone like her be public about breaking, she's criticizing DEI now. She's not saying the way we've been doing it, DEI is wrong. We need to try harder and do it this different way, whatever. She's criticizing actually some of the tenets and claims of it.
I mean, this puts her job at risk.
Yeah, and you know, we need to give props to the Young Turks because we've seen how many times, like with NPR, when that reporter wrote the piece that was critical of the biased political culture in that newsroom, the CEO, Catherine Maher, came out and denounced a subordinate of her who works under her. Okay. As far as I know, the Young Turks has not released any statements distancing themselves from one of their presenters, nor demeaning any of her views that maybe they disagree with.
So
I'm thinking in your circumstance, like the way I'm seeing this is, what was his name? Ted Wheeler?
Yes.
From there. Him getting his, I believe it was his apartment. They tried to firebomb. Is that correct?
I think they did.
The build, it was set on fire in 2020.
Yeah. I can't remember what he did in response. I think he basically forgave them or some limp response. But if he came out and said, actually, we need to clamp down on Antifa, it's just like, yeah, I don't have much sympathy, though. Like, you encouraged this. You led the entire culture of your town into the ground. You ruined everyone else's life. But it's only when your own life was slightly ruined, you were like, oh, man.
One thing to remember is that, remember this, the white liberals use this as a form of moral self-aggrandizement. And so consider Anna from 2017 being like, no, I am better than you because I'm the liberal, to then get to the point where it's like, no, actually all of this DEI stuff is nonsense. And actually we're the problem. That's just a complete 180.
But why did it happen?
Yeah, because of the culture that they're in.
And yeah, literally your lies got affected by it.
The lies they would tell each other about themselves, about conservatives and about minority groups, basically.
But again, it's a single human being. Like on the human level, it's the things happened in her life that showed her that it was complete nonsense.
Yeah.
But it was the effects of what you were doing to society.
I know.
So.
But I know, but I'm just more charitable. I mean.
You are.
I am. And this particular one I liked as well. Because people who murder people and then chop up the corpses apparently won't need bail. They'll just get, I don't know, whatever. But Anna's just going bonkers about it. She's just understandably, I think, upset. In fact, let's just tune in.
A corpse, not bail eligible, not a serious crime. I'm not even kidding, guys. I looked it up. It's real, guys. It's real. Listen, if being on the left means supporting this, then I'm not on the left, and I'm okay with that. Okay, so did further research because I just couldn't believe it. Here's more. With 2019 state reforms, mutilation and disposal of murdered corpses are among crimes that are no longer bail eligible. What are we doing? What are we doing? What are we doing, Jake? What are we doing? What are we doing? Someone tell me, what the F are we doing? Come at me right now and tell me I'm the bad guy because I want these people who dismembered corpses and tried to conceal the evidence in prison. Come at me and tell me I'm the bad guy. Come at me.
It is not left-wing or progressive.
And then Jake's just like, no, that's not left-wing or progressive. It's like, no, Jake, that's exactly left-wing and progressive.
But we have to stand in solidarity with BLM. Do you remember George Floyd, guys?
Yeah. And the people who are going to be targeted in this particular thing are probably going to be overwhelmingly minorities. So it's just...
Well, it's not even that. It's that the argument made during that time period of mass mm-hmm. rioting and the excuses made for it were all the, oh man, we need massive criminal justice reform. And what's the reform? Legalized crime
yeah.
by the back door.
Yeah. And Anna,
oh man, it seems crime's been legalized. Oh yeah.
But Anna is one of the few people who is a recognized mainstream left-wing commentator who's just like, hang on, this is crazy and we shouldn't do this.
She might end up dead.
Yeah, exactly. But she's one of the few that's actually prepared to go, hang on, this is just a bad idea. So I'm totally like in applause for what she's doing. I think it's great. I know you're very cynical about it. But and then finally, Anna has come to the correct opinion. The problem of the white liberals.
Okay, white liberals have trouble because for the most part, they tend to be pretty privileged, okay? Pretty well-to-do, okay? And are hyper-focused on the culture war stuff, which is typically driven by their unending guilt. Mm-hmm. So just be a freaking human being. Treat the freaking students with respect, okay? And can we please just hire the most qualified...
That's the point. The white liberals, she's literally got all of it right at this point. No. Criminals should be punished. The white liberals are the problem. They feel excessively guilty, and they think that this gives them moral high ground, and it's ruining everything around them.
I'm a big booster for Ms. Kasparian. I think maybe it has to do with my American background. You know, in the US, we don't actually have that many public dissident figures on the center left or left. The left and right wing and party association is, I would say, much more hard line than here. In the UK, you have people who switch from Labour to Conservative in how they vote, and vice versa. And you also have a big tradition of the old left really not being on board with a lot of this woke stuff, nonsense you have going on. In the US, there's much more conformity among the left, and I would say also along the right. There's certain issues you can't be dissident on certain things or you'll be kind of kicked out from your tribe. So
she's being very brave here.
Like, she is. We don't have many like her in America.
I have heard that California is basically a Stalinist state.
Yeah.
But then I wonder, like, I'm thinking of the Bolsheviks who helped the revolution and they're like, damn, I'm hungry. It's just like, yeah. Yes, you are.
Yes. But just to summarize, so Anna has accepted that it is the left, led by the white liberals, that is the problem, making sure that minorities don't get punished for the crimes. What does that make Anna? That, of course, makes Anna a racist. It was inevitable.
Is she even white?
No, she's Armenian.
Are they white?
Not really.
Okay.
I mean, not they're not European.
Are they not?
No, from the Middle East. They're Armenians.
Yeah, but the Middle East used to be part of Europe.
It didn't.
Good old days.
In the Roman Empire.
It was Greek territory, I tell ye.
But anyway, we'll leave that there. I just want to say that I'm actually very impressed with Anna. Because, like I said, I was never in that bubble, right? So it was very easy for me to go, oh, wait, no, this is all nonsense. I could do that years ago. But for her, that must be so much more difficult.
Also, I think her ideological transformation is genuine because we see it take place sort of piecemeal over the years. Yeah. Everyone should be very... It should take a second look at people who say, overnight, I became something completely opposite. There are figures like that.
Yeah. It's not a sudden Saul of Tarsus conversion she's had. This has been, reality has been chipping away at her. That's totally, totally true.
All righty. With that, we shall move on. And we'll go to the next section, which is about the Antifa gang trial. Right. So there is a gang trial going on for some members of Antifa. And the idea is that they're going to classify Antifa as a gang. Yeah. So there's a harsher sentence. And I thought we'd go through it, not only because Andy's here and he's the resident expert on all things left-wing extremist, but also it's a really interesting place to go because you've been covering this for ages. I mean, longer than you can probably remember at this point, that's the extremism in the US on this brand. But then the response to it, what do you do about it, has been the big question amongst American politics, I understand.
Okay, so this... There's a trial happening right now in San Diego County against two alleged SoCal Antifa members. This is really the Antifa trial of the decade. I've been covering this story as it's worked its way through the criminal justice system for 3.5 years with my colleague, Ava Knott. We have a big story coming out on the trial later today on the Post Millennial. But to sum up, In January 2021, and this picture was taken on that day, there was a violent attack on Pacific Beach in San Diego, which is a suburban, moderate, center-right community.
I can see from the building in the background.
Where Antifa came and attacked people who were peacefully holding a pro-Trump MAGA-type rally. There are videos and photos of the attacks. The Antifa people came in Black Bloc. They had weapons. They beat people with skateboards, with sticks. Of course, bear maced many people. Among those injured included a woman, included a man who was walking his dog. The dog got sprayed with the chemical. There was a group of high school boys who were beaten and attacked. So this trial is still ongoing right now. It's in its third week. Throughout this, throughout the prosecution, back in 2022, there was a secret grand jury that indicted 11 members of SoCal Antifa and prosecutors in San Diego from the DA's office there. They alleged that these people can engage in felony violent conspiracy. And the case is a big deal because it was the first time that a group of Antifa members had been charged with conspiracy anywhere in the U.S. It hasn't happened. Since then, in Georgia State, there have been 61 far-left extremists who have been charged in a RICO case, which is sort of similar, organized conspiracy for criminality. But in San Diego, with this case, I mean, what it means is that the significance of it is that there has been a string of successful convictions in this case. So there were 11 who were indicted. 9 of them took plea deals, and they will be sentenced soon. And it's expected that they'll do prison time. This is San Diego. This DA's office is not playing around. So with this trial, my reporting with Abe Benault is going to come out today. She's been sitting in the courtroom. The evidence that they presented, they found out what was the signal group that these Antifa people used to coordinate that day. They unmasked the identities of all these aliases, who they were, identified them picture by picture. Oh, you were wearing this. They brought out the costumes of the armor and the uniforms that these people were wearing.
And also their private messages.
Exactly. The messages that were sent between one another, showing the level of coordination that this is not a gathering that spontaneously became a brawl. It's people who came with the intention to carry out a violent conspiracy. One of them, the alleged ringleader, Brian Lightfoot, is accused of 16 felonies. So he's potentially facing a lot of years in prison. So this is the liberal and left-wing reporting on this has focused on attacking the DA's office and trying to delegitimize the case. Of course, liberal media is not covering this. If this was a case of a right-wing, far-right neo-Nazi conspiracy that carried out a violent attack, oh, you bet this would be leading the news every day. It's taken years to get to trial. So I'm covering this day in and day out. I've been working on it for years. Read my report later today on Post Millennial.
Well, we'll go through some of it here and jump in when you want to, because it is fascinating. Because as you can see, let's get this back on screen. You mentioned the media. I mean, I love this. The headline, a pro-Trump and anti-fascist demonstrators clash in San Diego Beach. They're just clashing. And then the image here is these people in Black Bloc beating the crap out of this woman who's got no weapons, is clearly not dressed for combat.
Yeah.
It's just these guys with their...
wearing armor. Literally wearing armor.
It's comical how bad that is as just a single demonstration of that. But to the trial, because you mentioned it's mad. And as you can see, this is Andy Nolan post-millennial here. And the guy mentioned is Brian Cortez Lightfoot. He's been charged with 16 violent felonies. And they say you can see in the video with him with white cans of bear spray mounted on his vest. So presumably this is the mace he had. And then if you scroll down, you can see some of the photos of the attacks. And it's just ridiculous. You can see them standing there. These are all the people, or a bunch of them, who have been tried.
Can you stop there for a minute? So I put together this graphic. The top two on the left are the ones on trial. Everyone else in that photograph has been convicted so far. Right. Two of them have already been sentenced to 5 years each because they had their sentencing was also enhanced because they committed violent crimes at the riot whilst having other pending felony crimes for unrelated cases. So yes, this is, I've never seen a DA's office actually do their proper work. And it's not just about, normally what happens, like, for example, once in a while, Portland might prosecute one of these Antifa people who actually set a building on fire that was occupied. There's been a couple of those convictions in Portland. They only focus on the act of the violence for, let's say, assault or arson or vandalism, not even vandalism, they don't care about that anymore. Assault or arson, let's say. They never focus on actually...
The gang aspect.
The gang aspect, the conspiratorial aspect of these people working with one another to carry out acts of violence.
Because I've always seen the response to this has been on the lines of declaring Antifa a terrorist group, which is accurate. They have political goals. They're not there for money. So it seems weird to say gang versus terrorist group. They're close to a terrorist group as description. But if you want to treat them as a gang, I think that's also fair because they act like it. So as you can see here, these are the chaps, and then here's the violence. And you can see even in the images, this guy bear spraying, I think it's the same woman from earlier who got beaten the crap out of. These fellas are not here for a fight. They're here for a Trump rally. Yeah. These fellas in the combat tactical gear didn't come for fun. I mean, you even have some of the messages back up there where they're texting each other, I want to fight. It's going to go down. I mean, this guy brought a huge ass stick to batter people with and his, some protective helmet so he wouldn't get battered.
Yeah.
Average guy. And then here's the Trump guys who got hit there.
And that was actually a photojournalist who was there just to document who was beaten. So there,
and he got beaten as well.
The SoCal Antifa members who came from outside San Diego, by the way, most about half of them were from LA County. That's several hours away. They were so overzealous in the violence. As I mentioned earlier, they attacked the dog and the dog's walker. They attacked this photojournalist, beat him with the stick on the back. So they went after teens, youths as well, children, school children who were there. So anybody who was in that proximity on that beach were terribly beaten and sprayed with chemical irritants.
So absolutely horrific event. Gang violence based on pure politics, the kind of which I mean, people have known about. I presume it's been happening in Portland, but then it's spreading elsewhere. That's awful, terrible for American society. Actual some pushback is not only interesting, but sort of the right direction. But what I find most interesting about all this is the defense side. Because, of course, as mentioned, there's only two guys on trial still. The rest of them are all been found guilty via plea deals. And as you mentioned here, there's, the two fellas. The last fellow, apart from that black guy called Lightfoot, you got this white guy, and this white guy is called Mr. White, Jeremy White. You say here, at the beginning of the trial, Defendant White suddenly pleaded he's not guilty by reason of insanity, which is really funny.
Persuasive. I'll hear him out now. I'm joking.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I want to check out just a whole bunch of writing about the case.
I'm retarded. Prove it. I'm a member of Antifa. Like, what was his argument?
Well, he just gets funnier and funnier because I went to this. This is some San Diego reporting on it, right? And I'm thinking mainstream media is going to be the way it usually is. But let's check this out because this is just weird.
It happened January 9th, 2021 in Pacific Beach. Counter-protesters crashed a rally organized by supporters of then-President Donald Trump. Authorities say the group believed to be associated with Antifa instigated violence, attacking at least 16 victims using impact weapons and mace.
We will stipulate to the term that we agreed upon.
Today in court, one of the 11 people arrested was sentenced to 4 years, 8 months in prison after accepting a deal, agreeing to plead guilty to conspiracy, assault, and unlawful use of a tear gas weapon. 39-year-old Derek Yak is a transgender woman who goes by the name Nikki Hubbard. Her husband, a transgender man named Gigi Hubbard, addressed the court defending her actions.
She defends people. She's not violent. And this is just political and fascist nonsense.
He also.
So are they just straight with extra steps?
I don't even want to talk about that aspect, but the point being,
okay.
Very, apparently. Very strange people. Because also her argument there, the transgender white. Whatever. It was that it was political persecution because he may have maced people and conspired to engage in riot and everything else, but that's political freedom.
I love the perfunctory characterization of it's fascist. It's like,
yeah, because that's one of the people who's accepted a plea deal, right? Now, getting back to Mr. White, because I found this, and this is the image here of the dog getting maced, which it just stands for itself.
No, I didn't like Antifa before, but now I really hate him.
Yeah, I mean, macing a dog in any circumstance.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Bear mace. Not even human mace.
Yeah.
But I got to read you the writing out of this because it's it makes me think his plea deal of being insane might not be entirely wrong to some extent. I still think he shouldn't get it. So they say here, prosecutors claim it was Jeremy Jonathan White who described himself as a gentleman in dashing armor and an Antifa super soldier who fought the cops and white supremacists during the lockdown. That's how he described himself.
Right.
Whilst macing this dog.
I think he's just really online.
The following day, after the macing of the dog video went viral, White then decided to post using his own Twitter account, pretending not to be himself. According to the prosecutors, he wrote, "Seems like the animal rights folks should really be mad at the owner of the dog, not himself. The owner of the dog was abusing his dog by getting it to attack people. Looks like that gentleman in the dashing armor was just keeping people safe." With his
forgot to log into the alt account, mate.
Yeah, this is his anonymous account. He's writing after he's been filmed macing a dog that he's the guy in dashing armor and the dog owner is at fault. That's himself.
So some of the evidence that's been entered into trial is that the suspects boasted amongst themselves and sometimes publicly about their involvement in the violent attack. Regarding Jeremy White, it's a very interesting tactic to attempt to plead not guilty by insanity. I've actually never seen an alleged Antifa member make that claim. It's risky in that if he's found guilty at this trial, there's going to be another trial to determine his sanity. And if he is found to be insane, he could be held against his will, institutionalized for the rest of his life.
Also, it doesn't exactly make Antifa look very good publicly, does it? So Antifa, yes, it's full of mental people.
But I'll read off the last of what he wrote on Twitter. This guy, again, under his old account, he wrote, "Looks like he was trying to get it to attack. Folks play stupid games." So this is him saying that, again, the dog owner is to blame for him and his dog being maced and the dashing guy in armor was just defending society. San Diego Police Detective Emily Clark testified that the dog walker had very good control over the animal and had a really close leash. The detective said that the dog's vest read "service dog." He maced a service dog.
Wait, was the woman blind or something?
I'm not sure, but either way, I mean, I'm not sure for what purpose it was a service dog. But he maced a service dog, saw a video of him doing this online, and then referred to himself as a knight in dashing armor and the dog as evil and the owner as evil. When White was arrested, so he's arrested by the cops. The day he's arrested, he responds by saying, "I was a medic. I didn't do what they said I did. There was literal fucking Nazi rallies on Pacific Beach, and I went there to counter it, and they needed medics. Yeah, everyone I talked to said, yeah, you were putting saline in people's eyes and helping people when they got pepper sprayed." He was macing dogs.
Yeah, I have to talk about this medic phenomenon within these far-left demonstrations. So this tactic has been really popularized by the far left, particularly in the Trump years when there were lots of Antifa gatherings attacking Trump rallies and Trump supporters in Portland and elsewhere. So the far left realized that they could be better organized if they delegated out different sort of brigades within their riots. So you have those who come more armored, more wearing helmets, and these are people who will be the fighters. You have, of course, their so-called legal observers who are there to record police, record other people, and provide evidence, for example, if they're going to do any civil claims of police brutality, etc. And you have those who claim to be so-called medics. These are usually people who are not medically trained at all. These are people who are cosplaying. They're literally have a homemade badge of something that says medic on their outfit. And they come with things like...
like a child.
Like bandages and other things in case one of their comrades gets injured in the course of battle. They are supposed to be there to provide first aid. But as we see in this particular example, and many, many other times I witnessed this myself, the so-called medics will engage in rioting themselves. So they will also throw projectile weapons, or they'll engage in brawling and fighting and other criminality as well.
Can we get this image back on screen, John? Because I can't get over the imagery of him macing a service dog while screaming, "I'm a medic."
I can't get over the fact that he's not obeying his Hippocratic oath.
But that's
first, do no harm.
But that's the insane thing that you're hitting at there, because I mean, this is it's sort of comical online, but they're also incredibly violent people, but they're also mental, which makes them kind of funny. Like, I keep going like 360 on this, but then you actually get to the situation and it's interesting.
I would say that most of the Antifa are not, they're not insane. What they are is sociopathic. You can see in their propaganda and the messaging when they're sort of anonymized that they really revel in not just violence, but particularly in cruelty against other people. Their propaganda is about celebrating when one of their opponents or a police officer is shot dead and posting those images or drawings of people being beheaded like IS style. This is all in their propaganda. And you can see in their messaging when somebody who is committing, who's injuring a service dog and his walker on a beach in San Diego, then what he says is he's celebrating his actions as something heroic. And just looking at the things that defendant Jeremy White has written over his long so-called activism career, I don't see signs of somebody who's been insane. It's somebody who has a very clear ideological agenda. He's been arrested at other riots in LA before for BLM. This is somebody who's had a lifetime of far-left extremism and is now shocked that there's a county willing to prosecute him.
Well, like you were saying earlier, this is the logical extension of the path that Anna Kasparian was on, where it's like, no, I'm better than you. You're garbage. This is just several steps further down that road, isn't it? It's about moral self-aggrandizement. And that is used as a justification to inflict cruelty on someone who is systematically degraded in their view.
Not even someone, a dog.
Well, I mean, even to a dog, yeah.
The fascist trash can has to be beaten up. You remember that one. But to get to the interesting point, the reason I mentioned that it's interesting that you go 360 on these lunatics is that it gets to how to deal with them. Because this is an article from USA Today whining about it, where the person they're interviewing is worried that this will be a blueprint, this particular case, to go after the rest of the Antifa cells across the country, because you'll be able to get them on gang charges, which since doubles the sentence, which is interesting. So I'll just end this off and let you take it away, Andy, I suppose, with just some recent examples of other stuff, because it definitely seems to be the case, at least I'm fully on board, I always have been, that, yeah, no, this smokescreen of I'm just individuals forming a collective is bollocks. Like, you guys are working with each other like gang or something like this across the country.
You have a uniform.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll just go through some.
And they went there with their banner. You can see in those photos and videos, they repeatedly held up all these Antifa symbols and the aliases that they chose within their secret encrypted chats also reference Antifa as well.
And they're just like the weirdest people. So this one, PhD biochemist, launched the Antifa Jane's Revenge domestic terrorist movement, has been sentenced to 7.5 years in prison for firebombing terror attack of a pro-life organization.
What a great slogan. If abortions aren't safe, then you aren't either. Abortions are fatal.
100% fatal.
Yeah, yeah. That's the point of it, isn't it?
So to recap just a little, catching people up, in 2022, when there was the leaking of the internal memo within the Supreme Court that they were considering potentially overturning Roe v. Wade, that launched then months and months of violent attacks on pregnancy resource centers and Christian houses of worships in the United States. So a pregnancy resource center, if you're not familiar, it's usually run by a religious organization, although not necessarily, where they provide diapers and counseling and support for women who are pregnant. And these resource centers do not provide abortion services. And because of that, they became targets of violence. This was a pro-life organization.
And then our diapers, so I'm going to kill you.
We don't provide that service. Well, then you're a problem, aren't you? So, but that's just not what we do. Yeah, well, you're going to have to.
The chicken shops have to provide abortions?
Yeah.
Or they have to be bombed?
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with these people. You know?
Well, with the violent far left, they have a lust for violence, and it's going to come out on a target no matter and who that target will change. It was convenient during the Trump administration that it was Trump supporters. With Trump out of office and there weren't really that many MAGA rallies anymore, okay, who do we target? Oh, we target churches and pregnancy centers. Now what Antifa have done is, oh, we'll target the people who are Zionists, those who are pro-Israel. We've seen the far left joining in with this whole Palestinian ultranationalist cause, even where they are chanting in support of Iran and Hamas. So this, these are, just to simply put, far less violent extremists. They're not, and they're not being reported as such in the media. There's always euphemisms to describe them. Protesters, racial justice protesters, Palestinian human rights protesters, so on and so forth.
Mostly peaceful protesters.
Pro-choice protesters. This was a PhD biochemist. He had everything given to him, a wonderful education, comes from a very well-to-do background. And he engaged in creating Molotov cocktails to firebomb a pro-life charity in Wisconsin. So he was convicted on terrorism charges and he got a very sweetheart deal, 7.5 years. This was a federal prosecution. He left this threat, by the way. He also wrote Jane's Revenge. And this threat was then repeated in all these attacks, this menacing messages at churches. What
can we just take a moment to appreciate the surprisingly good cursive handwriting that they've used for
their, a PhD student? But obviously,
well, that's the point. This is a product of a fine education. Like the curl on the F, the joining of the A for the abortions and things like that. Like my goodness, I don't write that well.
Are you giving him an A plus for cursive now?
Absolutely.
Okay, but he's not the only one. I mean, as Andy just added these, it's good to know. I mean, you can see here. So this is a trans-identifying member of Antifa. Well, they decided that they were going to bomb a pregnancy resource center and have been given 2 years in prison for that.
This person wasn't convicted for firebombing. It was vandalism.
Of vandalism.
But the thing is, like, I guess maybe Americans are so used to vandalism now. It's kind of like, oh, like, yeah, no surprises, no prison time. But there have been those who have been convicted of vandalizing, for example, a mosque or Jewish institutions who have served prison time and sentenced to prison. So we're seeing this sort of pattern of these far left extremists. We're not seeing it. We've seen it for years. It's been going on for a long time where they do get lesser sentences when compared with the same crimes, but done for far right causes.
Oh yeah. I mean, if they were the ones breaking into the Capitol on January the 6th, they'd all be out by now.
In Ohio this year, this is also a federal conviction case. In Ohio, there was a man who also liked in Wisconsin with that PhD far-left extremist. He used a Molotov cocktail to firebomb a church who was hosting drag queens events that he disagreed with. Okay, he was sentenced to over 18 years in prison. This is also a federal prosecution, just like the Wisconsin case. The Wisconsin firebomber got 7.5 years.
I'm just going to read out this sign for the audio listeners. She's holding a sign here saying, "Forced birth is violence. Abortions are healthcare.
Defend bodily autonomy. Abortions should be safe and free."
But I didn't even need those last two lines. That is so 1984.
Yeah.
Just inverse of reality. But moving on, because we're way over time, just to end this off. There's another guy here. He got done for bombing, didn't he?
Allegedly, yes, this was just actually last week in Alabama. This is somebody who was arrested over a February nail bombing.
Making IEDs.
At the Attorney General's office in Montgomery, Alabama. And if you look on his social media, he's in jail right now. He hasn't bailed it out yet, as far as I know, because of the seriousness of the allegations. He's left behind this whole trail of Antifa propaganda. And they actually were able to identify him, if you read the court documents, because in addition to carrying out that nail bombing allegedly that night, he was also allegedly recorded plastering these sticker propagandas in the proximity of the area. And those sticker proximities were Antifa propaganda. And he created a video where he was showing off these stickers and signs and whatnot that he then allegedly used the same night and in the proximity of the bombing.
And then the last one here is just the fact that they're on trial, the rest of them. Which
Can you open up that picture on the bottom right?
At the bottom right?
Yeah. I'll click through. I want people to see this and just remember the brutality of these people, what they do when they have their targets. This is a picture from the San Diego riot. You see, they already have two people on the ground. In addition to beating one with one hand, the other hand is clawing at the flesh. Mm. This, just remember that image. And one of those is a schoolboy, the victim on the right. So,
just actual fiends, if nothing else.
It's been an excuse for the worst elements of their class to find an excuse to hurt people.
The good news, which is trial of the decade, I think you are right to point out this is a very interesting future moment because you can decide what you're going to do with these people and how to push back and getting them on gang charges. Hey, it's an option.
I doubt we will see other prosecutors who would be brave enough to prosecute them in this way. The DA's office in San Diego has unfortunately been the target of a lot of media smears for their bravery in prosecuting this criminal gang.
Well, on that note, we shall move on.
All right, let's move on. Do you like conspiracy theories, Andy?
Do I like them, you say?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Oh, that's lucky, because we're going to be destroying a conspiracy.
Okay, good.
No, I love conspiracy theories. I think they're great. I don't believe any of them, but like, they're such a fascinating... I view conspiracy theories like science fiction. It's like, makes the world more
entertaining.
Yeah, they're entertaining. But they also sort of create this sort of mystical veil around what is usually people who don't really know what they're doing, struggling to do their best, right?
I guess why I find them irritating, and there's a lot of discourses that happen with conspiracy theories on the left and the right,
yeah,
is that a lot of it is like not... You can't just... These are hypotheses that, at least in the moment, often cannot be disproven. Yeah. So it's irritating that we're discussing something that we can't even get to the truth of it.
Exactly.
At the end of the day.
They become a red herring as well. Like, you're a planned truster, aren't you, Callum?
No.
No, I'm joking. Of course you're not. But they're a total red herring, because it's like, why are we talking about QAnon or whatever when we should be talking about whatever the subject is? But I thought I'd talk about the flooding in Dubai, because I find this very interesting. Because there's something of it that sounds like a conspiracy theory, but it's not really a conspiracy theory. It's all very open, and who knows? But anyway, so Dubai, I'm sure I don't need to tell people that Dubai is a desert city or a very small country in the Arabian desert. The climate of Dubai, just for anyone who doesn't want to take my word for it, what?
It's a city, not a country.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, but it's a state.
All right.
So, you know. But
it's an emirate.
Yeah, I know. But it's a state.
You just irritated me by saying Dubai was a country. It was like, England is my city. That was all.
Yeah, no, it is. It is my city. Thank you.
Okay.
But the point is, it's the most populous of the UAE. And again, if you don't want to take my word for it, it's a, quote, subtropical desert with very mild or pleasantly warm winters and scorchingly hot summers. They get about 3 inches of rain a year, which is not
poor.
Yes.
Drowning in rain.
Yeah, exactly. In summer, it never rains. So there are technological things that we can do about that. For example, there are pilots who can make it rain. As the BBC reported in 2016, this rare group of pilots fly missions in storm clouds, encouraging the rainfall with formidable flying skills by using simple chemistry. And so this is called cloud seeding, which, again, sounds like something that's a conspiracy, but it's not a conspiracy. It's just what they do. So what they do is spray salt into the clouds, and this has some sort of chemical effect where it clumps the water together and then it falls as rain. I mean, I would have thought that, hang on, isn't it salt water raining down on the land a bad thing? But I assume it's just not enough salt to be an issue. They've done this for decades now, actually. In the 1990s and before, they used to use silver iodide for this, because it's got a molecule structure very similar to ice. But in the 1990s, a shift was made to the non-polluting hygroscopic salts. I'm not a scientist. But the point is, they stopped using silver iodide and decided salt will do, probably because it doesn't poison the land or something. Fantastic. And so Dubai have a meteorological...
They have a department.
They have it. Yeah, I was going to say, am I pronouncing that right? I have no idea. I don't normally use this kind of language.
They have a government department that does this because it's sandy. They want rain.
Exactly. And here's a video of them inside.
Is it going to rain in Dubai today? Just so I know. I have to drive back from Abu Dhabi to Dubai.
No.
It's not raining. It's a sunny day. The UAE government invested more than $20 million in research to start a process called cloud seeding. The UAE performs around 1,000 hours of cloud seeding a year, and it's all controlled by this building in the National Center of Meteorology in Abu Dhabi, where they track the whole process. We met with a cloud seeding expert to explain how the seeding process works.
We wait the forecast. When we have a good, you know, chance for a cloud, we send the aircraft to that location. It go under the cloud,
in the first stage of the cloud. There is good updraft at that time. Start to release all the salt, and with the good updraft, of course, it will go inside the cloud. The droplets will become bigger and start to rain.
So it's not like magic or anything like that. It's just a bit of basic science. And they do this because why wouldn't you do this? You're in Dubai. Of course you'd like some rain. And so recently, there's been insane flooding in Dubai. And you can see how people have begun to start putting two and two together on this one. They got 2 years worth of rain in one day, which probably wasn't planned. They have had a slight problem dealing with this because, I mean, this is like some sort of mega storm.
Average day in London? I don't... Yeah. What are you complaining about?
Average day in London, unusual day in Dubai. And there are a lot of people saying, well, hang on a second. Look, it's just flooding because they don't have drainage systems. Because why would they? I mean, it never rains. Well, it does now, so you might want to start building drainage systems. And lots of people are like, well, hang on a second. Cloud seeding possibly to blame? And it's like, nah, this is just normal for Dubai, obviously. Here's the next one. That is insanely bad flooding. Have you ever seen a flood like that anywhere in England?
Yeah.
Where?
We have it every year, pretty much.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
Victoria Station flooded like...
Okay, maybe some
a year and a half ago.
I'm not even talking about London. I'm talking about the areas that have to flood every year because of the floodwaters.
Yeah, but
do you remember even when? I mean, Clarkson's Farm's a great example. You see how bad that year was.
Yeah, but it's not in the middle of a city.
Oh yeah. Oh, I thought you just meant have you seen floodwaters? I'm like,
no. Like in the middle of a town or something where the buildings are literally, you know, like yeah, okay. There's flooding.
My delivery is going to be late.
Yeah. At least of my worries, to be honest. I'm thankfully not in the delivery economy. But anyway, so places like Bloomberg were like, well, Dubai grinds to a standstill of cloud seeding worsens flooding. Average conspiracy theory position. But what I like about this is that this, if you go back 5 years, this was just a conspiracy theory, right? And so they say that, you know, this has happened because the UAE has been carrying out seeding operations since 2002 to address water security issues, and the lack of drainage can trigger flooding. The Gulf State's National Center of Meteorology dispatched seeding planes from Al Ain Airport on Monday and Tuesday to take advantage of a convective cloud formation, according to Ahmed Habib, a specialist meteorologist. So one expert says that they went and seeded the clouds. And this is something that has caused flooding before. This is from a 2016 broadcast on Australian media, where in Tasmania, they had seeded some clouds and it had created the worst floods in 40 years. And of course, you can see what's happening there. So it's not that we don't know, but actually cloud seeding can be possibly a little too effective. You can trigger flooding and massive amounts of rain if you do it under certain conditions. And so anyway, let's get to the conspiracy theorists who think the governments can control the weather. I mean, are they that crazy at this point?
What do they mean? Because, yeah, I can see the word chemtrail here.
Yeah.
It's a whole different thing.
Well, they say chemtrail conspiracy theorists vary in their claims, but some of the most popular include the belief that governments can control the weather on a massive scale, that scientists carrying out legitimate research on how to counteract climate change through a process called geoengineering is secretly poisoning us, or that even that powerful groups are spraying us with chemicals to make us pliant and easy to control. So, yeah, that's probably what some people think. But those people are like, look, the government is making it rain. Well, those people aren't wrong, right? So we can delineate.
Yeah, well, there's two different things.
I agree. But
I used to know a chemtrail believer. I had an ex-girlfriend. Her mum actually believed that they were poisoning the air so that we would all die out from not having kids.
Yeah.
Slight hole. Who's poisoning us but not breathing air?
Bill Gates.
Of course.
I'll get to it. But the point being, you can see why conspiracy theories would spring up around all of this, right? They are actually meddling with the weather. That's an indisputable fact. The question isn't really, are they doing things? Are they spraying things in the atmosphere? Blah, blah, blah. The question is, what is the intention of the people spraying things in the atmosphere? The conspiracy theorists are like, I think they're trying to kill us all. I mean, the flash floods are deadly. People do die in them, but that's, I assume, not the purpose.
Probably the best way to commit genocide.
No, but like I said, I'm not suggesting that's the purpose of the things. I'm suggesting this is maybe a case of you thought you knew more than you actually did, right? And so Time magazine is going to be like, well, I mean, conspiracy theorists are not entirely wrong, but they're definitely not right, because we've stigmatized the concept of a conspiracy theorist. And so they have to admit that, yes, they do deliberately spray chemicals in the air for various reasons, not just cloud seeding. But they say, of course, no such plot is occurring. But a recent slew of geoengineering news could suggest the basic sense of concern isn't that far off. Both the US government and influential billionaires have been toying with research to cool the planet with so-called atmospheric aerosol injection in the face of runaway climate change. Proposals that see a portion of the public getting a bit suspicious. And so when, like, for example, George Soros adds fuel to the fire, declaring his support for plans to try and brighten clouds over the Arctic to deflect the sun, you're getting Mr. Burns vibes out of it, right?
Yeah, but I want Mr. Burns' side.
Why? Why?
Are not in real life. I mean in the TV show. I believe Mr. Burns is right.
Do you really want Bill Gates to start pumping chemicals in the atmosphere?
No, yeah. Like I said, I'm not in real life. I mean actual Monty Burns. I believe that his plan was sensible.
They are seeding clouds. They apparently are going to start putting chemicals in the atmosphere. But no, those conspiracy theorists are still mental. It's like, are they that mental, though? Well, I'm prepared to accept that they are bonkers. But, I mean, if you would doing the things they're accusing you of doing...
Yeah, there's two differences.
The case would be a lot weaker from their side of the argument.
Because, like, the chemtrail lady I knew, she believed that all passenger aircraft were fitted with chems to destroy the world. I was just like, well, that's silly.
Yes, and that's very silly.
And then there's science, where you do things like this. And, yeah, probably not the best idea. Probably don't do that.
I mean, I'm even willing to believe that these people think they're doing the right thing.
Yeah. Do you know, you ever watch Snowpiercer? So the story of Snowpiercer is this guy builds a train, and it's like a vault from Fallout, but it's a train.
Right.
And so these guys are spraying the Earth to try and save us from climate change, and it actually ends up freezing the Earth. So then everything's really? Dead except the guys on the train.
I was trying to make it rain in Dubai, and there's an accident of flood that killed a bunch of people.
But it's a similar thing where it's just like, well, it's a routine problem with humans where we do something we don't really understand and then mess it up.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah, these are hugely complex systems, and actually interfering with them has knock-on consequences that we couldn't predict. But anyway, on this, any thoughts on this so far, by the way, Andy?
It's entertaining. I think my annoyance with some of the hypotheses that go viral on the right is that because it happens on the right, then the left reaction is to dismiss the entirety of any of the claims. And, you know, within big conspiracy theories, there are obviously nuggets of truth that they pull from. These articles you brought up have mentioned about various efforts to affect, manually affect weather through cloud stuff. And then it toxifies the whole discussion.
Yeah,
that's what I really hate that happens. And then the journalists who want to actually investigate these claims or questions, then if they write on it or report on it, then they are lumped into the far-right conspiracy theorists and then delegitimized. So then a lot of journalists, just legacy journalists, don't want to touch it.
Yeah, and you can see why they wouldn't, because it's just it's got a kind of smell around it where they're just like, you know, this will get on me as well. And it's because of the intentionality that underpins the conspiracy theory itself. I mean, the conspiracy theorists are not wrong that they are doing the things they're accused of doing. The question is, why are they doing it? And we can't have like a public conversation that's very reasonable about this, because one side is saying, well, you're trying to kill us all. It's like, no one's trying to kill anyone, surely. You know, it's not part of a grand plot to, this may age badly, it's not part of a grand plot to wipe out half of humanity.
It's just an accident.
Yeah. It may age really badly. But the point is, Bill Gates is backing high altitude, solar geoengineering to mimic the effects of a giant volcanic eruption, so thousands of planes fly at high altitudes, spraying millions of tons of particles, just particles, to create massive chemical cloud that will cool the surface.
Yeah, maybe don't do that.
Yeah.
Maybe don't mess with stuff you barely understand.
Thing is that I live in England and I'm pro-summer. I don't want the world to be cooled because it's not warm enough as it is, from my perspective.
Yeah,
probably a bit we can't put on YouTube.
This isn't going on YouTube. We're still banned.
Thank God. So the question then is, was cloud seeding responsible for the flooding in Dubai? Now, some experts say yes, and some experts say you're a conspiracy theorist. For example, Colleen Colger, a climate scientist at Imperial College London, says it's likely that the storm was supercharged by climate change because there's more moisture in the air, blah, blah, blah. And this seems to fly in the face of the Ahmed Habib, who's the meteorologist at the NCM, who says, no, we did seed it. So it's like, right. So woman in Imperial College London says, no, climate change supercharged that. And the guy at the NCM was like, no, we did it. Like, okay, I guess, who are you gonna believe? Again, there are more who are saying, well, don't blame cloud seeding for the Dubai floods. Why would we do that? The NCM itself, the institutional voice of it, has said, oh, no, we engaged in no such cloud seeding operations before or during the storm. Omar al-Yazidi, the deputy director general, says we didn't do it. So on that one hand, you've got one guy who says we did. On the other hand, you've got one guy who says we didn't. And other various institutions of the government themselves, it's like, no, we didn't. That'd be ridiculous. And apparently an anonymous official, and I don't know whether it's the guy that we've already heard from, but an anonymous official said that apparently there was cloud seeding on that day. And so we have been reliably informed that we are supposed to blame climate change instead. So the question isn't, were they seeding clouds? The question is, did they seed this cloud? Or was climate change simply responsible for this massive flood? I, of course, don't have an answer to this.
It's also interesting what is how something gets described or labeled as conspiracy theory and when it's not. Mm. When the left and the far left engage in conspiracy theories, it's not labeled in legacy media or broadly in wider society as conspiracy theories. I think, for example, blaming climate change on things that have no relation, no connection to climate change, that is a conspiracy theory. Blaming white supremacy or systemic organized white supremacy, these are conspiracy theories as well on the left. And it's not seen by the wider public as conspiracy theories. That's a problem. So it's this whole, even the whole concept of conspiracy theory is in some ways a tool that the left uses.
A partisan tool, that's the thing, isn't it?
A partisan tool to delegitimize entire categories of discussion.
That is true. But I guess we'll leave that there. I don't have any answers, just letting you know that who knows, they do cloud seeding, but the UAE government has denied that this was the consequence of cloud seeding. And I guess if you were doing this on a regular basis and there was a massive flood, you'd want to say, hey, yeah, that's not my fault. So believe who you want.
Let's go to the video comments, I suppose.
In Hypernormalization, Adam Curtis notes a rather interesting book by dissident novelists the Strugatsky brothers, written to parody communism taking over from a departed capitalist world. Aliens visit the Earth, but are completely uninterested in anything around them. They depart and leave behind zones with strange objects, essentially litter after a roadside picnic. Stalkers and national agencies entered these zones to try to extract the technology within. Strange behaviors like shadows going the wrong way and non-linear time are just some of the challenges faced.
Blimey. Also the inspiration for the Stalker game series, which... bloody great.
I mean, it sounds like a fascinating series of books.
The next one.
Callum, I was always taught by my dad, there are things you don't talk about, religion, politics, and money. That kind of attitude is the Anglo-Saxon attitude, and that's probably one of the reasons why we're in the situation we are now, man.
What's he responding to there?
I was complaining that Anglo-Saxons have a bad relationship with money, and it's why we're bad at finance, or at least a lot of us, is because we just don't talk about it to each other, and it means that people don't know how money works. I mean, I was bringing up the specific example for the UK, so that maybe this will like amaze you or something, but in the UK, we have a thing called a LISA. So for people who want to buy a house, you put £4,000 in, and the government gives you £1,000 for free, provided that you spend the account, whatever's in it, after 5 or 10 years on a house. So you're just getting this massive return for free. Anyone can open it at the age of 18. And then nobody talks about it. Mm. I mean, you would have, I mean, in any normal circumstance, parents up and down the country would be screaming at their kids, or opening it for them. They're just propping in a pound, so then it's open, so you can start saving money. And almost nobody knows about it. It's like, okay, bad. Bad culture.
I grew up in a dual culture home. My parents are immigrants from Vietnam, and when I traveled to Southeast Asia earlier this year, and it was that stark contrast in sort of what our cultural taboos are here and it not being there in terms of what people can talk about. It was fascinating to see that contrast. Like, I guess maybe because I've been accustomed to sort of the things that you don't discuss in polite British society, I naively kind of thought that maybe that existed in some way, like in most places, and it really doesn't. The British do really have a particular weird aversion to talking about politics and money. That in America, it's not quite as severe.
I think it's more mature in the United States, talking about what things cost and what they're going to take, and therefore people can roadmap things. Whereas in the UK, everyone just tries to avoid the topic altogether.
It's about making sure that other people aren't made uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's only uncomfortable for Anglo-Saxons. Like, you go to Russia, people ask how much you make, and it's not a rude question.
Sure, but people don't like making others feel uncomfortable. That's the point.
Yeah, but it's just the uncomfortability is a uniquely British thing.
That's
not,
also
not
then,
solely, but...
I mean, that I think that's also why the issue around immigration and integration is so bad here. It's like, it's seen as impolite to talk about that in British society.
Yeah. We also do have like a massive cadre of shitlibs who control the country. So they make any discourse on the subject toxic to begin with.
How many years have the Conservatives been in government here, though?
14.
Another 14.
Well, I mean, you might suggest that 0 years the Conservatives have been in government, because it's just been Tony Blair that's been in government for the last 25 years. 27, 8 years. One might argue.
Let's go to the written comments.
Yeah, Threadnought sends a super chat for $5. Thanks, man. And says, speaking of Antifa's most wanted, it's always nice to see you up and about, Mr. No. A nice shirt, too.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell us about the shirt?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got this in Thailand.
Right.
And it's actually Thai, Lao, and Cambodian New Year. So I thought I'd wear it for the occasion.
Yeah, it looks great, by the way.
Thank you.
Sam says, nice to see Andy No as today's guest. Always a pleasure to see him. So good to see him return after so long. Maureen says, I respect Kasparian. It must be difficult to acknowledge your viewpoints are wrong, especially if you built your career around it and are surrounded by people in an echo chamber. Her emotional way of talking still annoys me to the point where I can't take it seriously, but good for her. I agree with that. You know, I mean, it would be nice if she calmed down a little bit, but I think she's right.
What? Calm down, dear. Yeah, she's not gonna get that.
Yeah, but I mean, for her, this is like a big thing. She stepped out of, you know, the safety and security of being correct on the left, and it's a, you know, she's like literally stepping out of the vault into the wasteland as far as she's concerned, man.
And she's doing it at a time when she has a lot to lose. We see people like Don Lemon who now speak out after they've already been chucked out of the liberal establishment. Yeah. So,
and even then, they're still insufferable. I take it you watched his interview with Elon.
Oh, parts of it. Oh, it was too long to watch the full thing.
Yeah, it was insufferable. You know, he's learned nothing.
There's a reason these people don't survive outside of their corrupt institutions.
Outside of the vault.
Yeah.
I'm liking this vault wasteland analogy, actually. You enjoying the Todd Howard memes I'm sending you? Matt says, wow, I remember where I was after the 2016 US election when Anna called us dumb and told us she was better than us. A few years later, I was very surprised to have a discussion with Ben Shapiro. She's been on a journey, and I respect that. Even if she doesn't come all the way around to the right, this makes her come across as much less hysterical and more balanced than she used to. And that's the thing, like as you said earlier, you know, the fact that it's not just a, you know, hallelujah moment. The fact that you can see that she, you know, she's slowly had to be like, okay, I have to think about this.
Also, I think it won't be good for her to be on the right. She will be most effective by planting these seeds of dissident views that are actually at the end of the day nonpartisan on the left.
Yeah,
I mean the TERF, the so-called TERF movement in your country, would not be as successful as it would be without the left-wing feminists at the forefront of this.
Yeah, totally. And like, there's not much of a TERF movement in America, is there?
No, unfortunately.
Very peculiar. I mean, I'm not even going to go into it, but it's really weird. HR Slaves says, Anna will never be an ally to the right. I don't care if she wants to talk now. She made her own bed. Is this your alt account, Callum? She made her own bed.
Sadly not.
She can die in it. She doesn't belong on our side. How do you feel about that?
I agree with myself. No, it's... Look, there's just so many people online. I don't actually find it that small a world, the political discussion world. And when people, if they come to that conclusion over a long period because they're thinking about it, that's one thing. But when I find people who have had the consequences of their own thoughts happen to them and then change their mind, only when it's that, and on a proper basis, like all of California going down the pan, I mean, the mass exodus of human beings from California, for example, I have less sympathy because it's. I mean, Anna, what was she? She was assaulted by some guy.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, a homeless guy in a front yard.
This is the thing. Like, if she had come to this position through the obvious point of it's nonsense, that's one thing. But it, like the Bolshevik who goes hungry, it's just like, well, that was unexpected, wasn't it? No one had said that was going to happen, did they?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of things. So, first thing, it's kind of like a magic spell that gets cast on them. This whole, like, ego, like, thing of liberalism where it just covers their eyes and they just view you as a Nazi. But it's like a magic spell.
She is a multimillionaire, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And the second thing is, I'm pro people getting what they vote for.
Okay, yeah.
And if that wakes them up out of the spell and makes them realize, hang on a second, why was I voting for this exactly? You know?
It's also important to remember there are those who are so under the spell that even when they're victims of really horrific crimes, they still never snap out of it. Oh, think about the open borders female activists who have been assaulted or raped by migrant suspects, and they are hesitant to cooperate with law enforcement out of fear of how it could impact illegal migrants. There are those who have been killed by black criminal suspects in America who are prison abolitionists, and their family will say, well, the wishes of this my deceased daughter or son is that wouldn't have wanted the assailant to go to prison.
Which is true.
But I don't know what to do with that, because those people are just like, and be like, insane. Like, you are actually insane. Like, long live Comrade Stalin whilst you're about to be shot.
Yeah.
I just, okay.
Like, yeah. But this is what Yuri Bezmenov was pointing out. Look, some people are just irredeemable. Anyway, Threadnought sends a $20 super chat. Thanks, man. And says, if Anna keeps this up, she'll end up with an Antifa bounty on her head. I'm oddly starting to worry about her. She got herself into a very dangerous position. It'll be hard for her to get out.
Bet time.
Go on.
How long until she moves to Florida?
Well, it depends on the Young Turks themselves and the institution, right? She's pretty caught there.
I don't know.
You think?
If she keeps talking like this.
I guess, yeah.
Just saying.
Fair enough.
More safe.
Lord Nerevar says, I'll be honest, I didn't see her abandoning the left anytime soon. She'll always be one of the most insane people on that side of the aisle, so I assumed she'd always fight in their corner, not complaining though. Yeah, I like I say, I think it's changed. Brandon says, I'm curious to learn how your typical blue-haired Antifa shithead fares in prison. I mean, sure, they're scum, but prison is typically full of hardened criminals, not just people who, quote, bash the fash.
Has that happened, I wonder?
Well, there are...
like some Antifa with a PhD goes into prison and is like, oh, hello, souls. I wish to tell you about the proletariat. And it's just like, bend over, boy.
Well, it depends what prison you're going into, because often there are literally racial gangs in prisons, right? So you'll have a gang of white Nazis, a gang of black supremacists, and the white PhD goes, hello, fellow black supremacist. I'm not a Nazi. And then he'll get his head kicked in. And the Nazi will be like, you're white, so you have to come with us or you're going to die. So I was Antifa, and then in prison, I joined the Nazi gang.
It's from my understanding that the few that do go to prison keep their political views to themselves.
Yeah, I imagine.
And others there might know what that... person was convicted of, but it'll be something like assault or arson or some type of crime like that, and they are not aware of sort of the ideological underlining about that behind those crimes. And then meanwhile, these criminals in prison will still hold on to their really extremist beliefs. There are a lot of Antifa sites devoted to what they call prison support, and part of that is about sending letters and texts and propaganda about the Antifa ideology to their comrades who are in prison.
mean, it's definitely got a cult aspect to it at this point, doesn't it?
Yes.
There's no question of it. Like, the outsiders are evil. We have to support one another. The in-group is the only source of moral legitimacy. Yeah. And if you are separated from the group for any period of time, then it's evident that you'll stop believing these things. So we have to keep you kind of embedded within us, even when you're in prison.
There's an Antifa member in Washington State, Olympia, who was convicted for shooting a Proud Boy member a few years ago. And he's due to be out of prison soon. And there is an international Antifa blog site that is fundraising money to, in their own words, thank him for carrying out the shooting. So he's going to be getting cash as a reward for what he did.
I kind of want to take it to Poland. So, you know, they have a nationalist march every year. There's this black bloc of legitimate fascists who turn up every year. They basically only exist in Europe. And what's interesting, because I went there recently, as I found that they are incredibly similar into that hyper in-group defense and preference as the Antifa guys you described in the United States. I mean, we have a smaller amount of people who do that here. But it's funny how once you get that extreme, that level of cultish behavior seems to be very much the same.
The tactics of the extreme far left Antifa and that of the extreme far right are really the same. They are involved. They listen to the same genre of music, quite often punk, obviously with different political positions on it. They adopt the tactics of the Black Bloc. They have the whole propaganda with the stickers and the text and the recruiting tactics and the in those who are in, those who are out. If you cooperate with law enforcement or you somehow betray any of them, you are persona non grata and subject to be beaten on sight. They're violent thugs. They use gang tactics, and the tactics are the same of neo-Nazis and Antifa.
Matthew says, how are Antifa not classed as a domestic terror organization? They literally target people for their political beliefs.
Because in the United States, legally, there's actually, the government cannot declare an organization a domestic terrorist organization as like a, in terms of like a legal category. It's the First Amendment protects belief, period. You can organize as a neo-Nazi in America. You can organize as Antifa in America. You cannot be prescribed as you can in the UK. For example, the equivalent of Hizb ut-Tahrir in the US cannot be banned. It just cannot. What can be banned is if there's an international element to it. For example, Al-Qaeda, IS, Boko Haram, because those are, there's legislation around terrorism and it's defined in an international way. Those groups can be banned. So I know a lot of people remember that Trump tweeted at some point, I'm declaring Antifa a terror organization. It legally is not meaningful. It's like a political statement. It's something like he's saying, my administration will view them in that way, but it doesn't actually come with any legal authority to like prosecute them with like an additional thing or a sentencing enhancement.
All righty. Do you have any more super chats? Otherwise, we need to end.
No, but we're a bit late, so let's go 2 minutes. Just to comment on the other ones. Yeah. I know.
Sorry, my answers are long.
No, it's not your fault. Baron von Warhawk says maybe God just hates Dubai.
Can't think why.
Yeah. Nick Taylor says climate change is the ultimate conspiracy theory. So there. Kevin says cloud seeding is used all over the place. China did it for the Beijing Olympics. Pretty devastating for the farmers outside of Beijing watching their crops washing away, though. Yeah, but you know, it's not like China's got a tradition of caring about their bloody farmers, is it? An Arizona desert rat says, this makes me wonder which molds and fungi will start growing in the UAE since they suddenly have a bunch of moisture. That's a weird thing to start wondering about, isn't it? that didn't occur to me at all. Yeah.
All right. If you want to find more of Andy, you can find him here. I suppose John will get this on screen. So this is Andy's Twitter here, at Mr. Andy No.
Thank you. And my website is andy-ngo.com. You can support me on Locals and Patreon, and the links are on my website. Thank you so much.
There we are. Otherwise, goodbye.